I'm very pleased to welcome to Fremantle Shipping News, Mark Brophy. Welcome, Mark.
Oh, gee, thanks, Michael. Thanks for sitting in this lovely room here in South Fremantle. Nice cup of coffee.
Before you talk further about that lovely cup of coffee.
Don't drink it.
No, drink away. But you've been in and around Fremantle, South Fremantle for a long time. You must have drunk a lot of cups of coffee. Perhaps we'll come back to that. But you are a very well-known real estate agent in this area. When did you first come to Fremantle?
Well, first time I remember coming here was in 1962, and my dad and my uncle funded a cray boat for an Italian family of four brothers. And I remember coming down here, and I think they lived on South Terrace or Hampton Road, I can't remember, it's a pretty busy road. But I remember their house was blue and it had pink and like pastel green walls. And so we're down there a bit then during that. And
that might have been any one of a number of homes your description.
Yeah, I know. That's just about every second house then. But anyway,
62.
Yeah, 62, I remember, because it's the year of the Empire Games or the Commonwealth Games. And my dad also had something to do with the Commonwealth Games in 62. And the boat was a plank boat. It was Jarra planked with a rear wheelhouse. And it was green, cray boat green, with some red on it. And so we're down here a bit in the 60s during that build and that launching, picking up crays and going shopping in Freo, because we had shops then. You could buy stuff in Freo then. It was pretty good.
Where was the boat tied up?
I think in the fishing boat harbour, because we used to come down for the blessing of the fleet. And obviously to pick up crays. And I thought it was huge, but of course when you're young, everything looks big, but I don't know if it's 40 foot or 50 or 30, but it was green. And I remember the launching, and I remember going out on it a couple of times. It had a Gardner diesel in it. So that was that. And then I think my next recollection was when I was at Teachers College, I had a job as a postie delivering telegrams in Freo for 3 months. And that really got me going, because riding around looking at all the, you know, the old housing stock that was all run down, and no one had a veranda then because they were all enclosed with weatherboard or lattice or louvers, and everyone looked poor in my view. The housing looked poor, and so did the people. I think they all worked at either Joyce Brothers, Rob's Jetty, maybe Howard Porter's the motor mob.
Mills and Wares.
Hey?
Mills and Wares.
Yeah, Mills and Wares, that's right. Yeah, so they all looked a bit poor. So that was that job, and that's when I got really interested in it, because I was...
This wasn't a job where you had to sing someone a song when they answered the front door. You were delivering real mail.
Yeah, well, no, but I delivering telegrams by hand. Anyway, that lasted 3 months, and I really thought that was great. And then I suppose I got interested in Freo. Then my old man knew Paul Conti, a realtor. Anyway, he said, oh, why don't you give this son of mine a job? So I started in about 79 or 80. And I don't know, I've never stopped since then, and I still quite like it. Obviously the housing stock was pretty run down, and you know, the people were a lot different then. A lot of Italians.
Let's just pause it around 1979.
Yeah.
You own work for a Fremantle real estate agent. You've had this sort of general introduction to Fremantle since you were a young guy coming down. You know about some of the cultural events, blessing of the fleet, you know where the fishing harbour is, you know about industry in that broad sense. And what was it like becoming involved in real estate? Were there many other real estate agents around?
No, I was just going to say that, no. And there was no one here, and I was trying to think. I reckon in about 1982, 83, I reckon there's only two of us actually living here. One was John Dethridge. He lived here, and myself, and I know Jeff Brockway was prominent then. He lived in Smythe Road in Nedlands, or Shenton Park, I think it was. And there was no one else here, so there was very, very little competition, which was great. It was actually quite easy. Well, clearly we didn't have the legislation we've got now either, and, you know, the...
What did you have to do to become... registered, if licensed as an agent or a principal?
Well, I don't think you had to have a proper license until about 1980. I don't think you had to do any sort of course or anything, but I actually started doing my triennial certificate then, so I could run an agency at that time, and I don't know why I did it. It's probably because I was interested in it, I suppose. But
so when did you set up under your own name?
Oh, that was much later. I didn't do that till about 1990,
yes,
something like that. So I worked with John Dethridge for years. He was great, and I learnt a lot with him. And he's probably established me, I'd say, to be honest.
Now, just go back as far as you can remember, and there might be some particular examples of this, just to make some people who have bought real estate in, say, South Fremantle or Fremantle more generally, quite recently, cringe when they hear these numbers. But what could you buy a house in, say, South Fremantle for back in 1970?
1980, I think the weatherboards were all about 27,000 to 30,000, and the stone homes were 35,000 to 40,000. So the same home you're buying now probably equates to the stamp duty of what you were paying for originally then. But of course, they hadn't had any restorations done to them. And of course, the restorations done in the 80s never had council approval and were all a bit jerry-built. But it was just part and parcel of it. And there's no things like building inspections or handovers or anything like that. So it was all pretty loose. But yeah, they were 27 to 30. I was just thinking, actually, the other day, we had a huge boom the end of 87, 88, after the after the crisis with shares. I think it was October 87.
Yes, and Black Friday.
Yeah, and then it went up 60% for the year from October 87 to October 88. And I think at that time I made $87,000, which was a huge amount of money. And I remember thinking at the end of that year, I thought, gee, I can buy a whole house for this. I'd already owned a couple of houses anyway, but the amount of money I earned, I could well and truly buy a whole house, which was generally about 60 or 70 in 87, 88. And yeah, that was quite thrilling.
Now that, without going into the price of homes today, people typically are paying close to $1 million, or if the house is a bit more developed, more than, and much more than. What has happened when you describe the, if you like, the demographic this area, the way you've seen it through your eyes since the 1970s, 1980s, and here we are 40 years on?
Well, as I said first, I think there were lumpers and people working at Joyce and Mills and Wares, as you said. Then the first people to actually come here were probably academics. A lot of them were from Murdoch and places like that, and their favourite streets were Bellevue Terrace, Solomon Street and Barnett Street. So the academics were the first ones to actually, in my memory, to hit Frio. And then we got the children from Western suburbs people coming down here, like the semi-bohemian artists, musicians, a lot of those.
Real estate agents?
They didn't really start till late. Well, I don't know how I fitted in. But, maybe that was it. But anyway,
what were people looking for? What did they tell you, or what
well,
did
the
you
Western
perceive?
Suburbs kids were wanting to get away from Cottesloe, Mosman Park. They wanted to get away from their parents, hoping their parents would never visit, and if they did, they'd probably be lost rather than, you know, turning up to see them. And I think it was just like a cultural thing too, because, you know, a lot of hippies here. As I said, the Sannyasins were here in the 80s, which was really, really good. And the housing stock started to improve a bit, but we did lose a lot of ethnics. They seem to have gone, you know, went to Spearwood or Hammy Hill or somewhere like that.
Some people have sort of not so much complained as observed that with the America's Cup and the general gentrification that was happening anyway around Fremantle, that if you like, social or affordable housing ceased to be as plentiful. People were pushed out of central Frio and other areas, and is that something you observed at the time?
Oh, yeah, that did happen and still happening now, I think. But I think the worst thing that happened was probably, infill. There's a lot of infill going on in the 80s and 90s. And a thing called a density bonus, where you buy an old house and you got a concession for restoring the old house to put something on the back. So an R30 property turned to R45 because of it. People were shaving off chimneys and shaving off eaves and making averages on skinny driveways just to get this density bonus through. And I think that probably wasn't a great thing in the 80s.
What was the result of that? It produced what's deformed looking development sites, did it?
Well, loss of amenity. I mean, loss of shade and sun, and there's noise and people in your backyard or next to you, and I think that's not that good. I mean, one of the reasons that we live in where we live now is that it's got a big block of land and we haven't got those problems that I see every day with neighbours having air conditioning and shadows all over houses and, you know, noise. So that's been a bit of a problem, but maybe I'm just a bit selfish, but that's one of the main problems, I think.
Now, you've, in the same period, have seen the rise in those very early days of conservation as a movement, Fremantle Society in Fremantle. It must have been exciting, whoever you looked at.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was very exciting, actually. Fremantle Society was very, very big, and of course we had Professor Seddon, who, you know, saved lots of buildings as well. And
he was a very influential fellow around, wasn't he? And his publications
and
are quite
John superb. Dowson's done a lot of very, very positive things as well.
And his photographic works are just collector's items.
Yeah, well, of course, you had people like Roger Garwood living here as well. I mean,
Roger's books on Fremantle, similarly.
And he was a real character, Roger. He lived in Atfield Street and Holland Street as well. So all those sorts of people seem to have gone. But I think now, I'm just trying to think of the last few.
It better be fair to John and Roger. They're both still alive and kicking. They'll be disappointed to be consigned completely to a pied box.
No, I saw Roger the other day. I haven't seen John for a while. I might call him up now that you've mentioned all that. But
What did you think was happening in Fremantle at that period? And just from a commercial point of view, I mean, you're in business, and through that period you're still working with John Dethridge or the like. Did you realise that something big was happening to Fremantle and it was really changing?
Yeah, I suppose I did. You know, especially when the wool stores and iceworks and everything were all being converted to residential, that I wasn't actually for that, because I quite liked seeing the trucks coming and going and bales of wool and whatever it was, and you know, there was a bit of open space. So it was, I mean, the people buying houses now, I mean, the last few sales we've done, well, been a couple of lawyers, a couple of architects, people from the east, person in the money market, and these are all people that were doing jobs that you just never heard of in you know, in the early days. So that's all turned around.
Jobs in Fremantle.
But also the thing is, the parents of the people that were originally here are probably now the people that are living here, because they feel safe. You know, they haven't got the problems of, you know, getting knifed or something in Fremantle, but which never actually happened. But
I was going to say, Fremantle, when you talk to some people, had this reputation for not being entirely safe to go to at night. Someone had pick on you or this or that. Did you ever have those experiences?
No, I'm pretty lucky, I suppose. But yeah, I think High Street had a few problems, some of those pubs there, I'd heard. I mean, I think now you walk through town during the day and you get a bit of abuse, but I don't think there's too many, you know, threatening situations.
Let's talk about some areas of Fremantle, because you know all of these places intimately, having sold houses, I suspect, on virtually every street in the city of Fremantle over the years. People who do business, not all of them, but some of them, in the centre of Fremantle, in the City Ward, High Street, which you've mentioned, there's often criticism of council for not doing enough to make it more commercial, and things are happening at the minute. They're laying pipes, been laying them for the last 6 months or more, and one day they'll finish. But what's your take on the centre of Fremantle? You've seen it go from, in a sense, Sleepy Hollow to what it is today.
Well, actually, centre of Fremantle, I mean, you could buy things like, you know, kettles or, you know, sheets and stuff like that, or electrical shops. So there was actually good shopping there in the 60s. Whereas I think it's gone backwards a little bit in that it's, you know, mainly cafes and things now. But I think commercially, because of the internet, businesses are going to struggle forever there, you know, empty shop fronts, and same with South Terrace. So Sleepy Hollow, I don't know. It's probably Sleepy Hollow now, but I don't know what you can do about it, really, because commercial real estate is probably not looking that bright at the moment. And excuse me. So I don't think the council can do that much about it. But you could certainly go shopping in Fremantle in the 60s and 70s and buy things rather than going to the city.
Yes. Well, there have been various developments. As we know, there was where King Square's now been redeveloped. We had Myers at one stage. And then, of course, the almost the last place left standing is Target, in terms of if you want to do wanted to buy an electric kettle. I'm not sure if they sell electric kettles or not.
No, I don't know. Well, I mean, right in the middle of town, you could buy a new Chrysler too. You had Howard Motors and some other guy there near the pub. He was selling cars and Urquharts and all these places. So you would do your shopping here, yeah. That's
not to mention Perslow's the Undertakers.
Well, that's true. They were right there, weren't they? You want to visit them too
from
soon,
the cradle to the grave, Mark. You could live your whole life in Fremantle. And
yeah, that's right. Not get out.
Well, no. Well, we can't finally resolve those commercial issues, but let's move just out of the centre a little bit, come down South Terrace, cross over Ray Avenue.
Yeah, yep.
And find your way over South Street into South Fremantle. What's been going on in South Fremantle?
Well, yeah, it's really come alive, hasn't it, in the last 5 or 10 years?
How would you describe the changes? What has happened here to the casual eye?
Well, I think it's become very, very popular. I mean, years ago, no one wanted to go south of South Street. I remember with a woman I had from Dalkeith 20 years ago, I was driving down South Terrace and I got to South Street and she said, "Where are we going?" And I said, "We're just going into Silver Street." And she said, "Take me back, take me back." And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Oh, this is the deep south," she said. So I had to take her back and I don't think I sold her anything actually, but still. So yeah, I mean, I think that the buildings have all been refreshed. There's a lot more people wanting to live in South Fremantle. Years ago, Fremantle prices, residential prices, were higher than South Fremantle, and I think now South Fremantle is marginally higher than Fremantle. So that's swung around quite a lot. But the type of people down here now have definitely changed. The beach, I mean, you can hardly get a spot at the beach to park now, but, you know, 30 years ago, you could just, you know, walk down there and be no one there. And all that has changed. There's a lot more money, as you say, it's been gentrified. A lot of cafes, a lot of hairdressing salons. Actually, there's a few real estate agents here now. We're, you know.
Your office is in South Terrace,
yes,
South Fremantle.
Yes, yeah, I think I was the only one there in 1995 or whenever it was. But I think there's about three others now.
Take another area. North Fremantle fascinates me. I mean, it's over the other side of the bridge. Could almost be its own municipality. And
yes.
Once upon a time it was. It's got all of the dramas with bridges being replaced and the port, the container port, going south under the government's plan.
Tasker's and that, yeah.
What have you seen North Fremantle change over the years?
Well, I have. I don't do much there now, but yeah, it really has changed. I mean, you know, you had Tasker's and you had the boat ramps there. I forget what it's called now, some blue line or something. And they've done a lot of infill and new development there as well, but It's also isolated too, you know. There's not actually many shops in North Fremantle until you get to sort of Queen Victoria Street or
the little strip
there.
At Queen Victoria, which is a lovely little
area.
It's
come alive, hasn't it?
Yes.
But
what about the almost the suburbs, you could call them, of Fremantle that are within the city, the Hiltons, the Beaconsfields, the Whitegum Valleys.
Yeah.
What has happened to them over the years?
Well, of course, you know, most of Beaconsfield was called Hilton before, wasn't it? I think. Anyway, well, Beaconsfield, I think, is doing very, very well. Whitegum Valley, they're obviously doing quite a lot of infill there, with some very enterprising, you know, solar passive homes and things like that. So it really has come alive. But of course, you're missing all the trees that you used to have and the birds, which was the most attractive part of it. But I suppose that's everywhere, that's growth. Beaconsfield the same. I mean, Beaconsfield's in two lots. I mean, you get up to Solomon Street, and in my view, it's almost like Fremantle or South Fremantle, but you get over Edmund Street going east, and it does turn a bit almost into another suburb. you know, the 60s and 70s houses.
It's a different housing stock, different areas for for the land and so on.
Yeah, it is. And then, of course, you've got, you know, down south there, you know, Coogee and things that are
North
different
Coogee.
Again. Mm. Yeah.
So what is it that people are attracted by when it comes to Fremantle generally that's caused this change in the demographic?
Well, I think, I mean, everyone you speak to, you know, they all want to hang around a cafe and drink coffee, but you can do that anywhere now. It's, you know, I love my coffee here and blah, blah. A few people are attracted to the sailing club. It's got a boat. A few of the others probably wanted to come here years ago, but, you know, didn't think it was really safe. But there's a few, well, quite a few people here retiring here now, which was unheard of. You know, retirees, which just didn't happen before. It was
and yet if the secret gets out, it'd be terrible. That it's, I think, the most sophisticated retirement village I've come across.
Which one, sorry?
Right here. You can walk 10 minutes to the picture theatre. We used to have a full service hospital just down the track.
Well, that was a shame that emergency was stopped, but still.
We've got all of the restaurants and coffee shops, and you can walk to the beach. What more could people ask for? But well, can I take you back? You mentioned the Sunyasins earlier. That must have been an interesting time for Fremantle people to observe, particularly if you weren't a Sunyasin. What did you make of all of that?
Well, I really enjoyed it. You know, they're all wearing pink and orange and things like that. And a lot of them had businesses. I mean, there was Oregon Builders and other people involved in commerce, like, you know, Jay Harmon, I think we mentioned before. And they were very, very busy. I mean, you know, they restored the Norfolk Hotel and all sorts of housing stock. And, you know, the Virtue took over the pubs like the Stone Crow and the Sea View. They're all there dancing away with, you know, Bhagwan around their neck. And, no, I thought it was a very exciting time. I mean, I think a lot of people are probably a bit afraid of them, but I don't know why. They were just normal Western suburbs kids also escaping their parents.
So what is the future of this place we live in? Do you see it as just a natural evolution from where it currently is? Do you see something dramatic happening here? Is there going to be a big commercial heart to Fremantle? Does it have to reinvent itself as a film studio or an arts precinct? Should it be a place where every architect in Western Australia comes, lives and works?
Oh, gosh, that sounds exciting, doesn't it? But I don't know about that. I was speaking to Andrew Sullivan the other day and he was talking about something in White Gum Valley where they might get a big precinct going of various things like the meeting place and very other entities that they have here and locating them there. And I think that might be involving architects and the arts and whatever, but I'm not sure how far down the line that is at the moment.
Now, switching tack a little bit, just looking at something like your profession as a real estate agent. We touched on it earlier. When you started out, you could come into the business without too many formal qualifications. You didn't have to come in with a certificate, but you could go and get it. And the whole way that real estate worked then, there's the concept probably that underpins so much commercial life of caveat emptor, buyer beware, you take all of your precautions. What have been the changes in real estate for you over the
years?
Well,
massive legislation. I mean, I did my own triennial certificate, as I said, you know, like 40 years ago. But the legislation now where the bias is actually on the seller to provide things for the for the buyer. Sorry, yes, that's what it was. I knew it was something like that. So that swung around completely, and it's a lot tighter. But I must say, a lot of us agents aren't having as much fun. I mean, we used to hang out quite a lot and have beers together, and in fact, at one stage, I had an agent from a competing firm, and he'd been tipped out of home by his wife number two. And anyway, he asked, could he come and live with me in Atfield Street? And I said, yes. So whenever the old Bakelite phone rang, we didn't know whether it was a a listing or a sale or whatever it is, we're rushing to the phone. So those sorts of things didn't worry me, but I think now people would be too uptight to have that sort of thing happen. But yeah, Mike himself, he lived with me for about 4 months, and it was never a real problem. But I think now people are, well, they're a lot more careful in what they say, which is fair enough, but a lot of the fun's gone out of it.
So I'm taking it there was time then, we were all much younger back in the day, to have long lunches.
Fremantle wasn't actually a long lunch place, actually. I know Subiaco and Nedlands and that, they did, but no, it wasn't really long lunch sort of a thing, because we were all semi-hippies, and long lunches were for wealthy people. And no, it was a few beers at the Sea View, or a bit of a swim or something like that. So it was a different atmosphere for that. But actually, there's not too many young estate agents around now. I was just thinking, there is there. But
is that right?
Yeah, I was just thinking, I must have started when I was about 25 or 26. And I was pretty young. But I don't think there's any around now. They're all getting on a bit.
So what does that tell us?
Well, mainly because it's too hard, probably. And the income for agents hasn't been that great in the last 10 years. I mean, it's never steady, or it's always a bit erratic, but that's never worried me. Although my parents used to say, Mark, you should have a stable job. You should have stayed at Teachers College. But after a few years, when I'd bought a couple of houses and a holiday house at Eagle Bay and stuff, they then thought, oh, well, maybe the job's not that bad. So they sort of swung around finally after about 10 or 15 years that the job wasn't that bad. But it's a very, it's not a stable job at all as far as income goes. And of course, a lot of agents change agencies. I've been very, very lucky with mine. I've had Ginny with me, she was, 25 years. Denise been with me 20 years. So I'm lucky in that respect. I must be a good boss.
Well, I'm sure that goes without saying. And when it comes to practices, and we've touched on this incidentally so far, I think, but what has this COVID period? We've all come to understand that COVID isn't going, even if it has gone, it's in the back of everyone's minds. Mm. What has it done to the business of real estate agents over this course, both in the short term experience, but what do you think about the longer term?
Well, I think as long as we're kept safe, and I think our Premier's done a pretty good job actually, I don't think it's going to affect us too much here. There's a lot of people have been buying from the eastern states the last 3 months here, sight unseen, having their parents look at the houses. They're generally expats where they're from here, but I think we've had 5 out of about the last 13 where sight unseen. Block of land is Swanbourne Street and quite a few houses. So I think the safety in Western Australia is a really big thing. As far as home opens with COVID, we've had to be like crowd controllers and infection controllers. And, that's been a bit tenuous. But of course, the people that turned up to home opens were serious because they're just not passing by. So that was good, actually. So I think every agency in the last few months has had a really good run, and I think it's because of the safety, short amount of stock available. I think there's only 10,000 in the whole state and very, very few in Fremantle for sale. So there's no choice for the buyers, so they're virtually snapping at everything. And I think I was suggesting that to Sharon actually just an hour ago, that's what's happening. So I don't know. I mean, a lot of people aren't travelling. They've probably got a few more dollars in their pockets. And I think that, we're very, very lucky. I think COVID's going to be here for a long, long time. There'll be COVID Mark 2, 3 and 4 possibly.
Now, you've been here all this time. You must be one of the longer living in Fremantle residents about these days, Mark. Are there things that, whether buildings or events that have happened in the time you've been here, which you were really sorry to see go, that that are lost to Fremantle these days? The Seaview you've mentioned, it's become the local, so it's still
That was all pretty good. I mean, we had the jam tarts here, of course, in the 80s, which was always a big Sunday, which I thought was great. Look, I actually like seeing the industry, you know, in the wool stores and all that sort of stuff going on. And
that's,
you know,
all closed up
iceworks, you know, the trucks coming and going. Of course, we had little wool stores in Scott Street and Belmont Street too,
yes,
and these other little buildings. And that's gone. Also, you don't see, you know, blokes walking around in blue singlets and white singlets drinking, you know, King Browns on the front veranda now. It's sort of Chardonnay and designer clothes. I sort of miss that a little bit.
Well, you could bring the fashion back in, mate.
Yeah, well, I'm going to pull out the flares, actually. The polyester safari suit or something. But, yeah, I miss that. But there's not too many other events. I mean, we've created quite a few as well, I suppose. We did have Australia Day and things like that, didn't we? And the variations of that, Blessing the Fleet and that. Of course, that's not as big as it used to be. What else do they have? Oh, the St. Pat's Day March. But all the markets down there at South Beach and that are all really, really good. And so is that one out in Beaconsfield at the Fremantle College.
Yes, the Sunday morning market. So you've got all of these things that keep happening, or things that used to happen that happen somewhere differently now. Mm. What about the port? I mean, when you first came here, the port was, a different place, probably before containers really took over. What do you see as the future of that area being?
Well, I think it's earmarked for development for housing or high density housing. Bit of a shame, actually. Gone are the days of throwing a few streamers at the Centaur or something as someone goes to Singapore. But
you're talking about Victoria Quay.
Yes, I am. Yeah, you're talking about the other side.
Well, you can talk about both sides.
Yeah,
with the Victoria Quay side.
Yeah, well, Victoria Quay, I mean, they're getting a lot more passenger ship. Hold on, they're not at the moment. But the last 10 years prior to COVID, I think we hit a lot of passenger ships compared to before.
Yes.
And that was all quite good. But I think it is going to become housing. And, of course, it's going to move, you know, further south. So, I mean, I'm not big on density. So I'm not getting too excited about multi-storey buildings down there. I like the port as it is, but you know, that's just not going to happen, is it? But, you know, that's my view anyway.
It's going to be interesting to watch because there's no doubt a few permutations to be watched along the way with the port. If it happens, the container terminal will go in the next 20 years or so.
Yeah, it will, won't it?
Yes, and then it's all up for grabs in one sense, I guess. Are there any particular things, if you were the emperor, for the day, that you would like to see happen in Fremantle?
Ooh, well, yes, I would actually probably like high density stopped.
So that's interesting. There's probably some stereotypical view that real estate agents interested in selling property like to see property developed, perhaps, and probably even like to see really dense developments. And there's few instances of them, I suppose. You've got Johnson Court in the centre of Fremantle. Somehow it got erected and approved in the very early 70s.
And Arundel Court.
And Arundel Court, which in some ways is more amazing because in many ways it's more ugly. But why are you opposed to more dense development?
Oh, it's purely selfish reasons, you know. As I said, I just like less crowds, and all we hear about is high dense strata places are, you know, problems associated with noise or air conditioning or little barbecues on balconies where you can't have a dog or whatever, and, you know, neighbourhood problems or neighbour problems. So I suppose that density does create that sort of thing, and I suppose I was lucky enough to see it before it all happened and sort of wish it was, you know, there again, but of course it's not. So it's just a selfish thing for me. You know, well, I've got enough houses to sell without having to have some more high density ones.
it even well designed ones, I suppose, height is always an issue in Fremantle. Do you have sort of strong views about height?
Well, yeah, I do. Yeah, I don't like height at all. And, you know, and I think that ARCO should have been abided to as well. I mean, some cases you've got an R25, which has ended up an R60 because of some various reason that, you know, someone's put forward. And, yeah, it's just a selfish thing for me.
Now, to finish, and I love to ask people who are real Fremantle people like you this question. For you, who live here, work here, and have been here all this time, what is it that really sort of keeps you here, makes you love the place?
Oh, look, it's just different. I mean, the people are different, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the housing stock is just so interesting. I mean, wherever I walk now, I'm always just looking at houses, when they were built, how they were built, what was done to them, and that is really, really appealing. We've got a lot of friends we've known here since 1980. My wife was in Lilly Street and I was in Atfield Street, and so we met like that, and the beach, and just those things attract me. And also, I've got the advantage of living and working so close together, and my field of influence is also very close, so it makes it easy. I just find the job easy. I don't have too many bad days a year, but it's mainly the people here, I think. They are different. I mean, you take your dog for a walk down to Cottesloe and say good morning, and people just about have a heart attack. Whereas here, you walk down the beach and you can barely get from one end to the other in an hour, you know. And it's just great. And and I suppose I'm well connected, and I feel comfortable with that, with that connection with people. And
Now you better tell people just before we finish, so they can spot you down at the dog beach at South Fremantle, what dog you walk with.
Well, I've got a wolfhound called Scout, and I had another one as well. We had a pair of them called Ilsa, who passed away. But Scout is blonde. She's unsterilized, but she's not looking for a suitor, so be careful.
Well, on that precautionary or
Yes, that's right.
encouraging note, we'll finish. But
Good.
Expect to be tapped on the shoulder with someone calling to Scout in the next
Scout,
little
yeah,
while.
Scout. Scout's a good dog. Well, thank you, Michael. It's very good.
Been lovely.